there, and welcome to the Energy Studies Book Club. My name is Sam Smeltzer, and I am your host. And this is, I guess, essentially the first official episode talking about the books. And in full transparency, it is Saturday, May 30th, 2026, and it's been a little over almost 60 days since I did the reading list, which I was like, oh, things are going to get real. You get to hold me accountable. Joke's on you, I disappeared. Just kidding. You know, but this definitely, you know, being 60 days out, there's obvious reason as to why there's not an episode. You know, time, we can always talk about time, but also I didn't feel like I had read enough to record an episode. And part of this is also getting into the rhythm of this podcast and what it is and what it's going to be. And I kept listening back to, like, I saw the multiple downloads of the first episode. And then I'm like, is that just me? As I kept returning back to it and listening to myself say what my vision and my goals were, which is essentially what that first episode was when we talked about to be read. Here's what I'm envisioning that this looks like. And then there's the reality. And this podcast, the reason why I'm pouring energy into it rather than relaunching the Heart of It podcast, which is still on my list of to-dos and visions and goals, is because I wanted a way to continue to grow and figure out what that next evolution of growth was for me. And so, yeah, here we are figuring that out together. So here's the facts. The facts are, I've been reading Between Heaven and Earth, A Guide to Chinese Medicine by Harriet Beinfeld and Ephraim Korngold. I have not done any secondary reading of any other books because I've been reading fiction books, predominantly because I've been stressed and going through personal healing and growth kind of stuff that dictated that I rest, dictated that I process, put me in a state of mind that made it really hard to just sit down and want to read anything that's close to a textbook. So I've been plowing through fiction books. I've actually read three of them during this time frame while I was reading like a page here or there. When I measured out how far I've read in Between Heaven and Earth, I'm actually on page 60. At the beginning of chapter 5, reading the patterns, diagnosis, the doctor as detective as artist. Anyways, but I'm at the beginning of chapter 5, page 60, and then I did read the foreword. I was very determined to read the foreword of this book because as an author who writes forewords now, I'm like, we need to read the forewords because they have a reason and they have a purpose. They're not just extra pages. But those extra pages were four. So I've read a total of 64 pages since I left you in that last episode over 60 days ago. And so that's about a page a day. What I will say is that as I was kind of getting my notes together to share what I was learning and how I've been processing and growing upon reading this, these 60 pages, I realized that's like more than enough. A page a day, especially of this book, Between Heaven and Earth, there was still just so much. Like I'm very intrigued to see how long this episode might be after we get through all of it. To make sure that it's in the right kind of pacing and not super boring. But there were so many great takeaways, so many things that I was sitting with. And that's the difference when we're doing studies with books. You know, sometimes we get caught up in this idea that I got to pick up a book and I just got to plow through it. And then that's how my growth and my healing occur. In reality, we have to tune in and make sure the book's in alignment with where we are. And then we've got to give space for things to marinate and to settle, to really take in and understand what they mean. When we give that space, that allows us to really link them to things. Like, so for example, I just finished the chapter on yin and yang patterns. and the things that have been happening in life over the last 2 or 3 weeks, if I had plowed through this book at 10 pages a day, which would have put me, what, six days in, I wouldn't have had those experiences. And that would have impacted and changed how I received the information that was in this book. And a perfect example of this is that I really have read most of this book in chunks and referencing and piecing it together. And as I'm rereading it, I'm also facing that fact that I'm rereading a book that's not, I don't want to say it's not enjoyable. It's just so filled with knowledge and it feels like traditional learning that I think I still have an adverse resistance to because I didn't really love school. You know, if the topic is something I'm interested in, then that's great. I didn't really love reading until I found my genre of fiction books that I can kind of get immersed in. And so there's a lot of things, a lot of excuses that come into play that result in me reading the same sentence over and over and over and over and over again. And so I think that the first thing that I've already learned about myself is that enough is enough, especially with our growth, is that, you know, this isn't a structured curriculum. This isn't a class that I'm taking that has a deadline. And in fact, a couple weeks ago, I was just writing something and said, energy has no deadline. If I let this unwind and unfold in the time that it needs to, that's how I'm going to get the most out of this. Does that mean I'm dismissing my whole to be read pile? No. Does it mean that I'm going to take my time through it and see what happens and also challenge if I don't feel aligned with what's next in that pile? Yes. Am I going to try to not layer them on top of each other because that seems very overwhelming? Yes. So, but this is that flexibility and this fluidity. If we try to force things into being, it doesn't give, once again, that beautiful space that's necessary for this growth and evolution. Which is why I'm doing this in the first place. You know, really at the end of the day, I want to be a better version of myself than I was yesterday. I want to be a stronger energetic being. I want to be a better human. I want to be a better teacher. I want to be a better Chinese medicine practitioner, recognizing that, you know, I kind of got blasted with all of this theory and now practicing. I mean, my gosh, I think I'm coming up on 8 or 9 years of practicing Chinese medicine. And I still don't think I've had the time to really sit in the space of fully understanding it. And granted, I kind of have this little bit of a gray area that my specialty niche is more psycho-emotional than it is traditional clinical. And so I kind of can control when I need to go down the rabbit holes for a clinical case versus the burnout work that we're routinely doing. And because that's really just blending with OD theory and HR management and leadership development, which stuff I know very well, I think I was able to take those synchronicities and combine them pretty naturally. But we're getting to a place now where literally the other day I was talking to a team member saying that, you know, the ultimate outcome of our work is to really link it to what's happening in the body from a sickness, from a true wellness standpoint. The measurement that I truly believe for employee engagement is when your health insurance premiums go down, when your claims go down, when people are actually well, wholly, I want to say holistically, but I know we put that in a bucket, but as a whole person, they are, as a whole person, they are well. And engagement and the capacity to engage in the work that we're after is actually an outcome of that. Engagement showing up is success in well-being. It is individuals having the space and the ability to give at that higher level that we ultimately are seeking in the workplace, right? That highest potential that we want people to achieve. You know, randomly, I'm sitting here thinking about, I don't even know what I know. I'm watching this show on Apple TV that is kind of raunchy. So if you don't like raunchy, don't watch it. But it's Marco's Got Money Problems. In it, there is a scene where Michelle Pfeiffer, who I love Michelle Pfeiffer, she plays the mother of the lead female character. And she gets in an altercation with this other mother who makes a comment about this idea that you have these high hopes for your children, and when they don't hit that mark, it's just so disappointing. It's a really kind of offensive scene. However, when I sit there and think about it and kind of take a step back as I'm watching this episode and thinking about in terms of energetic imbalances and even employee engagement, what I find is the reality that sometimes our children, and I say this even thinking about little Sam, my childhood, my inner child, didn't have the capacity to show up in my full potential. And that begs the question as to why. We want to be really simplistic about it and say, well, it's because they had bad parents or it was in a bad environment. It really is a holistic picture of everything that has happened and the environment for that child up to that point. We don't naturally decide to stop pursuing dreams. Yes, sometimes we're kind of pounded into to not pursue our dreams, but we stop showing up less and less. Our light starts to dim because it is a energetic immune response of the body trying to care for itself. And I think this is going to be very apparent when we start diving into the book and the lessons that I've learned in the last 60 days in these first 60 pages, okay? But I think that was really important to just illustrate when I'm talking about growing, when I'm talking about studying and this continuing process and being a continual learner, which I know many of us are, we're learning all the time. And we recognize that our entire environment, the world, our whole human experience is teaching us. It's not just what's in this book. It's what's in this book plus whatever the fiction books are that I'm reading and how those are swirling through. It's these books and the fiction books and the random podcasts I listen to, the music I listen to, the TV shows I'm watching, and what's happening in my therapy sessions, what's happening at work and in my relationships. All of these together is how we are learning and growing and healing. And that's why I really wanted to do this podcast, is because I wanted to capture that in real time so people give grace around just looking at the facts of, like, I've only read 60 pages in 60 days. But let's sit here and recognize how much growth and true learning has happened in that 60 days. All right. So without further ado, let's dive into Between Heaven and Earth. And the way that I like to do this is just how my brain works, is I've highlighted some passages that I want to read to you, and then I will kind of riff off why these passages were really meaningful to me or caught my attention and made me pause for at least this time around reading this book. It was worth noting. All right. So we're going to start in the foreword. And this is on page 3 of the foreword. And this is the passage. It says, "For Americans, psychology, the study of how people think, feel, and behave, captures immense interest. In contrast, the gaze of Chinese culture is averted away from the individual and instead directed toward social groups, the family, collective, and state. So psychology in China is quite underdeveloped, and its medicine has focused primarily upon physical symptoms, but because Chinese medical theory assumes human process unfolds as a consequence of the tension and unity between interacting systems, mental phenomena are not considered to be altogether separate or distinct from physical events. We have fused Chinese theory with outlooks from Western psychology for the purpose of transcending our cultural practice of isolating physiology from psychology so that we can begin to knit together the fracture that split body from mind. And there couldn't have been a better passage that I started off with that kind of just perfectly links to where I left off with this idea of what I love about Chinese culture and even where Chinese medical theory is at this point in time is that it's not looking at psychology strictly at the individual. It's looking at the collective. It's looking at the entire picture and how that is unfolding for people. And this is the primary reason that, and this is in the foreword when they're talking about why they gravitated towards Chinese medicine, thinking about the polarity between Western and Eastern philosophy, especially in the medical field. For me, this is what caught my attention with Chinese medical theory in my very first Qigong class and moving forward, my first medical Qigong class, because it was the first thing I ran into that wasn't just me, but talking about the collective we. How, you know, as human beings, we have an innate desire to connect to others, this sense of belonging that's embedded in who we are. And so that means that at a very organic level, we feel this responsibility or need to energetically interact with others, causing energetic reactions. And how does that impact us? Starting with the most basic energetic reaction, which is child and parent. Whether parents are present after birth or not, there's a whole, and it's one of my favorite lessons in Chinese medical theory, but talking about energetic embryo development, that is energetic relationships happening. And they are causing ripple effects and impacting us while we're in the womb from the state of when the soul decides to enter the body and enter this lifetime. It is noticing the relationship and even the energetic dynamics at play between the biological mother and father at the moment of conception. So what that relationship looked like when the child was actually conceived, what the mental health, the physical health, and emotional health was of the mother while they were carrying the child. All of this is together. Then what is the village that cares for, using that term again, once again, another reference to that, Margot's got money problems, but the village aspect of who's around and what energy is that? Good, bad, indifferent, ugly, all of that. You know, you start thinking about this energetic equation of energetic impact on individuals and noticing that we all impact each other. And social media, another layer there, has expanded our ability to be impacted energetically by others. But even like what you watch on TV, once again, we're going back, what you listen to, all of these things have energetic programming in it, not like brainwashing, but they are a outpouring, like even books, and they're an outpouring of an energetic expression. And so when that outpouring is received, it has a reaction. It has a reaction. So this is about this collective and really focusing on, you know, this initial passage reminded me that one of my biggest takeaways from Chinese medicine was the reuniting and the stopping of the fracturing and the splitting when it came to well-being, when it came to responsibility and accountability. We always want to go to a state of blame. We want to make something less about us. We don't want to take accountability. But we recognize that me is part of that collective we. And so that that embedded kind of being is essential, and not acknowledging it and seeing it is doing us a massive disservice. All right. So that's how we started, right? That's how we started here. So now we're going to jump to my next passage that I have is on page 5 in chapter 1, Our Journey East, Exploring Foreign Territory. And it says, the ancient Chinese imagined themselves as part of one unbroken wholeness called the Tao, a singular relational continuum within and without. This thinking predates the dissection of mind from body and man from nature that Western culture performed in the 17th century. So once again, just reiterating what I just kind of riffed on. The next passage I have highlighted is on page 7 in the same chapter under Taoist Philosophy and Action. And it says, protecting human life by preserving the conditions within which it thrives is the purpose of Chinese medicine. Each of us is pictured as an ecosystem as well as living within one. The balance of forces within us, yin, yang, heat, cold, blood, qi, determine our internal climate, our health or disease. And then there's a passage from the Ne Ching, a classic medical Chinese text, that says, maintaining order rather than correcting disorder is the ultimate principle of wisdom. To cure disease after it has appeared is like digging a well when one already feels thirsty, or forging weapons after the war has already begun. Chinese medicine knows that storms interrupt clear weather, that illness stalks and gains a foothold when we are vulnerable. Its strategy is to enable us to withstand the storm without becoming disabled by it, and to accumulate resources in times of good weather, peace, and plenty. So this is, for me, it talks about Taoist philosophy in action, but this is resiliency. When we were talking about, I say that because if you listen to earlier episodes of this podcast, like previous seasons, we've talked about the buzzword of resiliency. In fact, there was a whole season where we were reading in the podcast book club, and that's what everyone was seeking, was resiliency. I'm pretty sure it was like post-2020 COVID coming back, wanting to see people able to bounce back. This quote here speaks to this idea that the strategy has to be about accumulating resources in times of good weather, peace, and plenty, which means that I need to be accumulating, caring for myself when things are good, when things are calm, and when we have a lot. You know, I think a lot of times we're planning, especially in business, for when we don't have enough. And we operate from a mindset of scarcity, especially in the world of HR. And we talk about budget or compensation, even insurance. Like, we want to operate from a place of scarcity, that what happens if we don't have enough one day? How do we prepare for that rainy day? And instead of thinking about, how do I use my resources to plan for that rainy day or that storm, by ensuring that my resources, my human resources, the human capital, the people are taken care of so that they can navigate the storm. And we've heard countless stories about when this is done correctly, that when the storm comes and those employees have been cared for, we find that people begin to step up as well to help navigate the storm. Because if you allow them to care for themselves, even financially, and they're financially secure and well, when times are lean, that's when we find people, like, for example, I've had employees who will say, you know, things, we're struggling, I don't need all these hours, cut my hours back. I don't need this bonus. I don't need all this PTO, and modify that. Somebody who's actually in it isn't. And then when I think about that, isn't that the definition of engagement? We want someone to have that loyalty, that buy-in, to be there in it. And the only way we ever see it is if we're there when things are good. And now there's always going to be the exceptions. the other day I was meeting with a group, and they kept talking about, like, we want to make sure that we don't have another bad hire ever again, or that we never have someone that gets in that's not a fit for the culture, or we never have an accountability or a performance issue of this nature. And I've been doing HR long enough, and even with the energetic theory and the awareness, there is, you know, the spontaneity of people and human beings. There is no way to avoid that. There's going to be a storm that you never saw coming show up. That's typically people related. And the question is, how are you going to navigate that? And are you going to be able to? But we also should not strategize, planning like that's the inevitable. And so, because I know that that's coming, I'm going to basically create a plan of strategy all around that that's what's going to occur. Right. And so when we think about Chinese medicine, when we think about even the energetic health work that we do at the Heart Center, and this is, you know, embedded here at the core, as I'm looking at this, this is affirming that this is why I believe in this so passionately, that we are really focusing on that ecosystem and that climate, and correcting that disorder and getting that wisdom so that when the storm shows up, you can navigate it. And to be brutally honest, we've done some corrective shifts that I would say are pretty minor. So this is not like massive curing of all disengagement or everyone's fully re-energized, but even minor shifts and that awareness of wisdom has allowed individuals that we've worked with to navigate some pretty nasty storms and stay at the top. And keep moving forward rather than letting it be a storm with the tidal wave that takes them under. And I also will say that regardless of who you are, if you believe in growth and you believe in healing and you believe in continuing to grow and learn, we all have the possibility for a storm that's going to come out of nowhere. None of us are going to get to a place, I shouldn't say none of us, because there's always possibly somebody, but for most of us, we're not going to get to a place where there are no storms, that it's only, you know, puppy dogs and rainbows. And for myself included, talking about these last 60 days, you know, I got hit with a storm that's not what you would say is a traditional storm. So like something kind of blew up in a relationship or at work or something like that. But internally, something began to shift and it caused a storm more like a internal earthquake that I've had to recover from, one that most people can't even see, but was very real and has created aftershocks that are frightening and a little incapacitating at times. And I don't see this as a falling backwards. I see this as another level of growth and evolution. And I do believe that all the work that I have done, this caring of the internal climate, it's not perfect, but I'm in a place where I'm able to navigate this. That, yeah, I still have low points, I have dark points, but I'm able to come back from it. Okay? Yeah. On page 11, I think these are just things that I just needed to hear again for myself. There's a couple of these that aren't worth like me taking up too much time, but, on page 11, it says the organ networks of Chinese medicine were not equivalents to the anatomical organs of Western medicine. Organ networks were defined functionally, not structurally. As such, they included emotional and mental function as well as physiological performance, and even their physiology was defined differently. And for me, I think that's just really ingraining the terminology of how we describe and the contrast of the organ networks from Chinese medicine standpoint to the ones defined anatomically in Western medicine, and really looking at it's not structural, it's functional, and it's holistically emotional, mental, and physiological performance that is defined differently than how defined in Western medicine. All right, next chapter. So in chapter 2, Philosophy in the West, page 19. Within this worldview, nature and humans are machines governed by, this is under nature and the body as a machine. So within this worldview, nature and humans are machines governed by mechanical laws, systems that do work, tools of production. Western medicine, correspondingly, is the study of how the human machine works. When people are like mechanics or like machines, doctors become like mechanics. The mechanic occasionally performs routine maintenance, but mostly intervenes to execute emergency repairs. He plunges into the working parts, replacing the non-functioning elements, and puts the machine back into working order. It follows that the doctor, as mechanic, fixes the broken body machine. This, once again, just kind of brings to the forefront what's happening in current Western medicine. For most, I mean, there's definitely are shifts happening with functional medicine, but for most, we go to our doctor when something's not right, right? We go to have something fixed. We don't feel well, we're sick, something hurts, and we go. And Western medicine as a philosophy is really trained, rather than focusing on root cause, like why is this occurring, as to how do we fix it? Is that going to be a medicine? Is it going to be surgery? How do we take care of the broken part? Is it replacing it? So transplants, if we think that we can't replace it and it's broken and we deem that it's not necessary. So there's times when I've talked to clients and they've had organs removed because Western medicine has told them that it's not needed any longer, or they don't, like, their body can function fine without it. The machine can run. They've had it removed. And so going back once again to those organ networks, thinking that it's not structural in Chinese medicine, it's functional, and it's got an emotional and a mental capacity as well as a physiological that's not just tied to how Western medicine defines it. But I really like this imagery that they use in the book between a gardener and a mechanic. Once again, a mechanic is definitely necessary. And when the body is breaking down, you need a mechanic to go in and figure out how to get those broken parts to start to work again. This is not Chinese medicine, or even Eastern philosophy is not meant to replace that. It is meant to be the complement. You know, mechanics show up when storms occur. So whether that is like a minor cold, like symptoms, that is like a baby kind of storm, or you wake up in excruciating pain and it's an elevated, storm, or you got to be taken to the hospital. Like, those are storms. And if you can't navigate them, then that's why we want the mechanics there to do that. I mean, by all means, when my body breaks down, I'm so grateful for a mechanic to be there and to help me. On the flip side, is there a way to ensure or greatly increase that we don't break down, that we can care for our system? And that's where that gardener aspect comes into play. So just love this imagery. Once again, I think I forgot about this imagery. And so as someone who does speak for a living, I'm always looking for terminology that helps bridge that gap. And this is one of them. All right. So my next passage is in chapter 3 in Philosophy in the East, The Doctor as Gardener. And this is under the motive force Qi, the motive force Qi. So this is, I know that this is a passage I'm always looking to affirm and really help with my linguistics around explaining Qi, because Qi is something that, well, you'll see in this passage. So matter is Qi taking shape. mountains forming, forests growing, rivers streaming, and creatures proliferating are all manifestations of chi. In the human being, all functions of the body and mind are manifestations of chi. Sensing, feeling, digesting, stirring, and propagating. Chi begets movement and heat. It is the fundamental mystery and miracle. Life cannot be separated from the way it manifests. When the heart beats and the breath is warm, it is understood that life exists within the body. When the heart stops beating and the body becomes cold, the life force or chi is no longer present. Life force and chi are one. Like fresh air, healthy chi moves freely. Like stale air, stagnant chi is heavy, oppressive, constrictive, and congestive. Like air, chi has its own movement and also activates the movement of things other than itself. Just as the wind moves the trees, grasses, and water, so chi moves the chest, causing inhalation and exhalation. People do not inhale chi, rather chi is the motive force that establishes respiration. In this way, chi is the cause and also the effect. The essence of food is also a form of chi. This highly refined essence is the source from which the material form of the body is constructed. When the chi of food and the chi of air enter the body, they become one entity known as pure or righteous chi. Air chi represents the immaterial motivating aspects of chi and food chi, the material or constructing aspect. Chi is both the foundation of structure and the catalyst of transformation and movement. You know, we talk about chi and how everything is chi. And I think, you know, this passage for me, once again, helping me understand, increasing my understanding and finding the linguistics and words to talk about how chi moves and breathes and manifests. Because it takes on so many forms and is so central. You know, for me, in this passage, it talks about how life cannot be separated from the way it manifests. When the heart stops beating and the body becomes cold, the life force or chi is no longer present. Chi is the life force. To me, sometimes I've said the word like it's the personality. It's what allows us to come alive. It's so much more than just breath. It activates the system. Yes, it gets the heart pumping, but it also, you know, does this functionality, but it also functions on this deeper level. Page 33, the gardener does not make the garden grow. Nature does. The gardener is an ally who prepares the soil, sows the seeds, waters, and removes the weeds, placing plants in the proper relation to each other and the sun. If the gardener did not tend the garden, it would lose its unique identity and grow wild, merging completely with its surroundings. To blend with the larger environment, the gardener protects the integrity of the garden by promoting growth in some areas, restricting it in others, adding compost to keep the soil fertile. He observes and nurtures the interaction between the garden and environment. When I read this, I had to pause because I was like, who is the gardener? Is the gardener the doctor? Like me as a practitioner? Is the gardener me and caring for myself? And I personally, and I obviously would love for you to weigh in on this, but personally, I think that's both. It's yes and. It's not or. As a doctor, a Chinese medicine doctor, you know, when I work with somebody, I've never really thought about it, but it does feel like, not saying that people are like plants, but it is like getting a plant and trying to figure out, you know, what would allow it to thrive, not just in that moment, but for me all year round. You know, what is it going to need when it gets cold? What is it going to need when it gets too hot? How much sunlight does it need? How much nutrients does it need? Movement, music, what, you know, lighting, you know, all those things. What is that like for that plant to thrive, for that individual to thrive? What environment is necessary? What internal nutrients are necessary? But for me personally, and this is where I think the ultimate goal of medical Qigong is to obtain a conscious inner harmony with oneself. And so it's an awareness of knowing what it's like to be in harmony internally. And so the ultimate goal is that everyone becomes their own gardener, that they're tending to their garden, which is their body, on all levels, and being able to readjust to ensure harmony, to be fluid enough and to provide those nutrients as the environment and the climate changes. Climate from external sources, internal nutrients that you might need that's different as you're growing and healing. Like, none of us need the same things. Like, we don't eat the way that we ate when we were 5. We probably don't eat the way that we ate when we were 20. We need different things, different nourishment, different support teams to evolve and to grow and to tend to that. So I love how we talked about the mechanic and the gardener. And for me, this even brings greater clarity for my role when I work with clients. It's such a privilege because you get to be with them in their garden. And you get to become a trusted collaborator on how do we tend to that garden. And that's where it's completely different than plants when we think about people. I mean, when you show up and you're like, help me with my garden, you're help me with all these aspects of myself and help me find harmony and help me tend to it and make these shifts. That's such a sacred space. I couldn't not highlight a concept around qi, moisture, and blood. These are terminology that I'm familiar with, and I'm still always trying to get more and more comfortable with. So just as earth is comprised of land, ocean, and atmosphere, so the body is organized as blood, moisture, and qi. Blood governs tissue, the material form of the body. Moisture governs the internal environment, the body's inner ocean. Qi governs the shape and activity of the body and its process of forming and organizing itself. Qi also implies the totality of blood, moisture, and qi, the total summation of the life of the organism. Within the body, every phenomenon is a product of the interaction of blood, moisture, and qi. Without proper moisture, the qi becomes hot and agitated, and the blood dries up and congeals. Without blood, moisture is dispersed and qi is scattered. Without qi, moisture, and blood stagnate, coagulate, and cease circulating. Each constituent exists as an individual entity and yet depends completely upon the larger system, the body. All functions and processes are interdependent, co-generating, and mutually regulating. This is on page 34 and 35. The reason why I continually am drawn to passages of this nature and looking for further clarification, I shouldn't even say further clarification, but ensuring my understanding of qi, moisture, and blood. As you can see, we have been talking about qi and playing with different definitions and how it is all encompassing and how it takes on different forms and has different roles and functionalities depending on the relationship to the other variables or terms that we're looking at as far as patterns. So that's one piece. The other part is we talk a lot about blood. We talk a lot about moisture. It's always funny. I was just at a conference and this woman was like, I've been reading about Chinese medicine and I want to know about getting moisture. And I was like, oh, you want to learn about getting more moist? And she's like, don't say it like that. It's pretty interesting how culturally we have an issue with the word moist and even moisture. It causes discomfort. But thinking of it as this is the aspect that governs the internal environment, the body's inner ocean, without proper moisture, the chi becomes hot and agitated and the blood dries up and congeals. So thinking about moisture in this aspect of we don't want too much. We don't want like an internal swamp, but what about this internal ocean? And I know for me specifically reading this really took me to working with individuals energetically on the table. There's an imagery that I've been getting in more recent years when I'm checking the energetic levels per se. And now reading this, I'm like, oh, maybe I'm checking the moisture levels at this point in general treatment protocol. As someone who has naturally intuitive skill sets, so I'm pretty sensitive to energy. I can see imagery, I can hear things and all that kind of fun stuff. I have the beauty to learn from experience and then doing some research for further understanding. And so some of the imagery that I see at a particular point in our process and protocol, it looks like I'm checking an inner ocean. I would define it that way. If you're a client listening, maybe you've had me define it that way and I'd talk about it. And now here's me learning in real time that perhaps this is a measurement of the moisture within that individual. What's actually happening at that time is a balancing and adjusting of the moisture level to an appropriate for harmony. From a mindset, I always saw it as replenishing chi, replenishing reserves, because that's how I was taught when I was doing the protocol. But now thinking about the imagery and thinking about this concept of moisture, which I knew was a piece, but I've never really, really looked into it. I think that's partially because, you know, our culture thinks the word moist and moisture is kind of uncomfortable. And so not really looking at it, but now noticing it in this terms as a true composition, the ocean, the blood being the land. So the physical formation of chi, moisture and ocean, this is that to me is the way that energy flows through the body. It governs the internal environment. I'm still like, I'm actively processing and seeing it in my mindset of what that means, like looking at these landscapes that I've seen images of and how maybe it is showing me imagery around the internal environment and that body's inner ocean. And then the chi governs the shape, activity of the body and its process of forming and organizing itself. So, you know, a lot of times when I see this ocean, it's in a cavern, it's in an aspect. But yeah, it's just fascinating. So I say all that because this, me continuing to learn, is bringing to light certain things that I will consider when I'm working energetically with individuals on the table. If I remember or someone asks me, you know, in the community, remind me, because I'm probably going to take stock of this the next time I'm working with my clients on the table. But if someone reminds me, then I will do a follow-up and mention how that feels differently now that I'm tuning into it from that perspective. So, yeah. All right. The next, I have a couple passages here, and I'll just read through them all. They kind of are scattered throughout the pages, but this is page 38 of Observing the Signs Diagnosis, and it goes through 39, and even 40. So we're just going to read all of this. This is really starting to show the introduction of heat, cold, wind, dampness, and dryness, as well as the five phases of wood, fire, earth, metal, and water. I don't want to spend a ton of time talking about this because I know the book's going to dive deeper into this, and I think there's going to be greater outcomes there. But this sets the stage, and these statements, once again, pivotal and just affirming for me some of the things that I was actively learning last time that now are kind of foundational, and just making sure that these things are set. So a person like a garden is a subject to external excess is subject to external excesses of heat, cold, wind, dampness, and dryness, as well as to deficiencies of blood, moisture, and chi. Dryness, regardless of whether it originates from an external climate or an internal condition, it is the relationship between the body and water that keeps the tissues moisturized. It is the relationship between the body and water that keeps the tissues moisturized. The body must be able to absorb, store, and circulate moisture in order to adequately hydrate the cells. If any of these functions breaks down, symptoms of dehydration will appear. So once again, this was, I think, just tying into, I was in a I was having a moisture moment, really focused on that. And so this tied in there. All right. All phenomena are ordered according to the five phases of wood, fire, earth, metal, and water, which represent five evolutionary stages of transformation and correspond with five organ networks, five seasons, five climates, and five personality types. The theory of correspondence describes the parallelism and synchronicity of events in the inner and outer world of the human organism. All phenomena are ordered according to yin-yang and the five phases of wood, fire, earth, metal, and water, which represent five sorts of fundamental process, each of which correspond with five organ networks, five seasons, five climates, and five personality types. The workings of the body are associated with each of the seasonal cycles of evolutionary transformation, birth, growth, ripening, harvest, and decay. Each of the five organ networks perform a function within the cycle, analogous to the five climates and seasons in nature is the internal milieu generated by each of the organ networks. And then there's these great charts in this chapter. I'm just going to continue. I'm jumping to page 44. Chinese medicine reveals the impact of distress upon the whole person. Disease reshapes mental, emotional, and physical life. Like a weatherman, the doctor of Chinese medicine forecasts the onslaught of stormy weather and predicts who is likely to get what. Five types of people emerge from the configurations of physique and character that correspond with the five phases and organ networks, not by an act of will, but out of their predispositions, habits, and tendencies. These types make their diseases, manifesting the strengths and weaknesses of their nature. Earth becomes easily oversaturated, and the earth type generates phlegm, edema, and mental quagmires. Fire flares easily, and the fire type produces inflammation, dehydration, and high anxiety. Wood proliferates rapidly, and the wood type provokes trembling, cramping, and rage. Water hardens and freezes, and the water type develops sclerosis. These big words, sclerosis, arthritis, and indifference. Metal cuts away and restricts, and the metal type becomes breathless, stiff, and unarousable. These just once again talk about the five phase theory, which has become pretty core and central to the work that we do at the Heart Center. And so I think for me, once again, taking a moment to really just absorb the foundation in these early chapters before we move into, because a big chunk of this is going to dive into those elements. And so before we get there, I really just wanted to make sure I took a moment and breathed these in. And maybe even said them out loud. I think sometimes I got to say it out loud and quote the book because it makes it more credible that I'm not making this stuff up, that I actually have learned it and I'm repeating it or sharing it from a source. All right. Let's see. And the last passage that I want to go through is around problems in search of a solution treatment. So this is on page 44. If the cause of disease is understood as imbalance, then the goal of treatment is to recover balance. Problems are resolved through methods of complementary. To resolve conditions of cold, apply warmth. To resolve heat, apply cool. Stimulate movement to relieve stasis and estrange leakage to protect depleted reserves. Disperse excess, strengthen weakness, moisten dryness, drain wetness. This speaks to this idea of a definition of balance that I've really been embracing. You know, in terms of Chinese medicine, when I first started studying medical Qigong, we were just starting to bubble up. I shouldn't say just starting, but once again, the trend and the buzzword of work-life balance. And that was something that was on my radar. And I was like, how do you even have that? Like, what does that even look like? And I had read a ton of articles. This definition of balancing really made sense. And so when we're thinking about balance, I want you to think about this idea of how do we resolve the condition by looking at what the imbalance is. And as we continue through this, and I'm sure it's going to naturally kind of come up, the imbalances that we witness in an OD perspective or in a physical illness perspective translate into the Chinese medical theory and then give us a map for rebalancing. It also says in here, and I loved this quote, there are as many treatment approaches as there are individuals. This was exactly what I was looking for, which is why I think Chinese medicine went right to the heart for me. I knew by the time that I took my first medical Qigong class that the answer that we were missing in HR, leadership development, workplace culture, all of that fun stuff, had to do with looking at and respecting the individuals, the diversity that is within the organization. And so it couldn't be a one size fits all. And this pains me a little bit when I do run into individuals who are turned off by the term Chinese medicine and associate it with a religion or a spiritual kind of awakening rather than medical theory, which is what it's based off of. But that alienation that people feel like it's about trying to apply a universal method that they don't agree with to them. What I really love about Chinese medicine is that it sees the individual and it adapts. And a lot of the work that we do is taking this medical theory and trying to look at it from a mapping perspective of the current tools that we have. There's so many great tools when it comes to OD or health or well-being, but we know that not every tool works for everybody. This starts to create a map as to why not and maybe what tools could be helpful or why you're naturally gravitating towards something. All right, and then my last quote from this chapter is, what works in the garden may be inappropriate in the factory. Compost doesn't nourish a machine and oil and gas. Oh, wait, let me read that again. What works in the garden may be inappropriate in the factory. Compost doesn't nourish a machine and oil and gas do not enhance the soil. Chinese medicine readjusts balance, enhancing self-healing and helping chronic long-term problems. Western medicine affects the structural components, suppressing and eliminating pathologic phenomena, intervening in life-threatening crises. A strength of Chinese medicine lies in its power to detect and meaningfully describe dysfunction, even though the structure appears intact and physically sound. Rather than look for abnormalities of structure, Chinese medicine looks for disharmonies of qi that over time can affect structure, but may appear prior to gross manifestations of or clinically diagnosed disease. And I think that really kind of sums it up nicely. So these were my major kind of highlights. I know some of these were just me sharing the quotes because, you know, there's only so much time. We're at about the 60-minute mark. I feel like 60 is the number. I'm going to have to look up what the number 60 means because I've been saying it so many times during this episode. And I didn't even get through all 60 pages. This is only 50 pages. There's still 10 pages left. The next is the cycles of circles, a theory of relativity, and yin and yang. I really love that chapter. There was a lot that I took away from it, and so I'm gonna hold it till our next episode and talk about it then. And I also think, just in this terms, you know, giving myself some more grace, I think for the next episode I'm just going to make me get to page 83, so read another chapter and then talk about those two. I don't feel so bad about having this huge first episode because it's supposed to make up for two of them. So I'm grateful that you, hung out with me for the hour as I kind of recaptured what happened, my delay and being here. For those of you who don't know or didn't check it out, we have an online portal where we're going to continue having conversations. I put the feedback. I am going to include the quotes that I found there, so those passages. So if you want to dive into them more so, if you want to add your piece around it, if you're reading something different and you want to start having conversations around that, let's do that. I also have had a couple of questions around bringing back the actual book club that would come and do a podcast conversation live. I do miss it terribly. So I'm thinking about doing that. And if you're interested, make sure that you click on the link in the show notes and that will take you there for that. Is that everything? I feel like I'm a little off because this is my first time and there was so much that I wanted to get through and I didn't really know how this was going to go because I wanted it to be transparent and authentic. But as always, I'm so grateful to every single person who chooses to listen, whether you agree with me or not, hanging out with me, just being here. And I'm just so grateful for you. I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for your grace. I'm grateful for the community. And you know, talking about community, I just want to thank Amy Lynn Durham for allowing me to be part of Magic Thread Media and hosting this podcast, getting me to bring the podcast back or get back into podcasting. I've missed it so much, and doing this episode really brought that to the forefront for me. I've enjoyed doing this conversation so much. All right, so until next time, next month we'll pick it back up with those next two chapters. It won't be so long because now I'm in the flow and I have realistic expectations for myself. And regardless, I'm gonna show up as I am, and if that means I've read no additional pages, we'll just cover yin and yang and talk about why, because that's what this is all about. So until next time, have fun reading and cultivating, and take care of yourself. Be well.